we have to think differently in order to be able to see the future. Mm-hmm. And if you think 10 times or exponentially, the answers come much easier than if you think incrementally in 10%.
Welcome back to Future Proof, friends. I am your devoted host, Bill Sheridan, and I've got a little secret for y'all. Okay, ready? Here it is. Things are changing. And I know, worst kept secret in history, right? But it's true. There's a lot of new stuff happening in this profession, a lot of disruption, a ton of craziness, and it's not slowing down. In fact, it's speeding up. And here's the thing. For us little folks just trying to make it through the day unscathed, it's hard to keep up with all that. We need some help and some guidance. And luckily, there's help out there. There are scores of thought leaders who are tracking these changes, who are tracking changes that haven't even happened yet, and letting us know what we should be paying attention to. My boss, Tom Hood, has a name for these people. He calls them lookout posts, right? They're the people who are paying attention to the stuff that we don't have time to pay attention to and giving us guidance on what these changes mean for our businesses and our clients and what we should be doing to make ourselves a bit more future ready. And I've talked to some of these folks here. And if you're a regular listener to this podcast, you've heard what they have to say. I'm talking about people like Daniel Burris and Barry Melanson. And Ron Baker and Ed Kless and Rick Richardson, the list goes on. Seriously, people, these folks come loaded with good advice. And if you haven't already, go back and listen to their shows. You'll be better off for it. Well, I've got another good one today. My guest is Gary Boomer. And if you thought the folks I mentioned a moment ago know their stuff, well, Gary knew it before any of them. Gary's the founder, visionary, and strategist at Boomer Consulting. And talk about influence. I mean, Gary himself is recognized as one of the most influential people in the profession and an authority on pretty much anything related to technology and firm management. But his influence goes way beyond that. He's a true leader in the sense that he elevates the people on his team to become influential as well. His son, Jim, who's the CEO at Boomer Consulting, and Sandra Wiley, who's Boomer Consulting's president, they've also been named among the profession's most influential people. So Gary has built this Boomer think tank to last, and that's the mark of a great leader right there. But back to Gary, though. Here's how highly others regard his advice and counsel, okay? He's been named one of Accounting Today's 100 most influential people in accounting for more than 15 years running. He is one of Inside Public Accounting's 10 most recommended consultants. He is one of CPA Practice Advisor's top 25 thought leaders. And in 2013, he was inducted into CPA Practice Advisor's Accounting Hall of Fame. So yeah, when Gary talks, people listen. And this week he talked with me, and we'll get to that conversation here in a moment. First, here's what caught my eye this week. It's the World Economic Forum's annual Future of Jobs report. Just came out a week or so ago, and it's an eye-opener. For years now, the folks at the World Economic Forum have been beating the drum about the impact that artificial intelligence, machine learning, digitization, all those things will have on our workplaces. Well, they're no longer talking about the impact these new technologies will have. They're talking about the impact these technologies are having because this stuff is happening now in real time. So first, let's talk about the division of labor. According to the report, this year, humans will work 71% of the hours required to get the job done, while machines will work 29% of those hours. In 2022, according to this report, humans will outwork machines just 58% to 42%. And in 2025, just 7 years from now, machines will be doing the majority of our work, 52% to just 48% for humans. So yes, machines are taking jobs. That's happening. And what jobs are they taking? According to the report, here are the 10 jobs that are most in decline in this age of automation. Okay, starting from the top, data entry clerks, accounting, bookkeeping, and payroll clerks. Then you've got administrative and executive secretaries, assembly and factory workers, coming at number five, client information and customer service workers, followed by business services and administration managers. Then you got accountants and auditors on that list. Number eight is material recording and stockkeeping clerks. Number nine, general and operations managers. And finally, postal service clerks. So accounting and finance pros, there's a lot to be worried about on that list. Machines are increasingly able to do the stuff that we've been trained to do for years, but it's not all bad news, okay? By 2022, again, according to the World Economic Forum, emerging new jobs will outnumber displaced old jobs by almost 2-1. Okay, did you hear that? By almost 2-1, new technologies will create more new jobs than they destroy. And in order to take advantage of that, though, we've got to learn some new skills. And you've heard me say that, say this before, and now we've got folks from the World Economic Forum backing me up on that. According to these, the World Economic Forum's report, these are the skills that we're going to need to remain relevant going forward, okay? Number one, analytical thinking and innovation. Number two, active learning and learning strategies. Number three, creativity, originality, and initiative. Number four, technology design and programming. Number five, critical thinking and analysis. Number six, complex problem solving. Number seven, leadership and social influence. Number eight, emotional intelligence. Number nine, reasoning, problem solving, and ideation. And number 10, systems analysis and evaluation. In other words, the stuff the machines can't do. So really interesting stuff from the World Economic Forum about the future of work. You can read the Future of Jobs 2018 report in its entirety at bit.ly/WEFjobs. That's bit.ly/WEFjobs. And that's kind of a perfect segue back to my guest this week, Gary Boomer. He loves to talk about this idea that in order to make ourselves more future ready, we have to change three things. We have to change our mindsets, our skill sets, and our tool sets. In other words, how we think about things, how we learn about things, and the tools we use to make us better at these things. And man, he's spot on with all of those. So he and I spent some time recently talking about how we need to think and learn and equip ourselves differently in a decidedly different time for our profession. And he's got some great insights here. This is fascinating and crucial conversations we all need to be having more of these days. So settle in. Here is Gary Boomer. So Gary, thanks for being here. First of all, tell me a little bit about your origin story. Where'd you get your start? Basically, how did you become Gary Boomer? I don't think that I know much about that.
Well, I'll try to make that story somewhat short, but it's a little bit interesting in that today my role is dot connector at Boomer Consulting, and I'll try to explain that. But going back in my career, when I first started, I was selected as the partner in charge of technology in a regional firm. And I always say that was because I'd had one class in programming, Fortran, but told them it was absolutely useless. It was like knowing German but being sent to Mexico City. But I always had an interest in technology, and I actually started with a Big Four firm, and that went with a local firm in Manhattan, Kansas. And we grew that firm from a small firm to over 50 people. And technology was one of the assets that we really viewed in that marketplace. We thought we were more technology astute than probably many of our competition. Mm-hmm. And having that interest, I tell people today, I probably took technology a little more seriously than most people did at the time. And I heard Ray Kroc speak when he was alive, and he said he didn't invent the hamburger, but he just took the hamburger more seriously. And that's how he started McDonald's. Also, I had an audit and tax background, which helped me. And having to understand the technology when the spreadsheets came on, and I don't mean Lotus 1-2-3. I was there for VisiCalc and WordPerfect and some of those early tools that were really quite innovational. And I would say that those things have caused change in our profession. So I've been around long enough that I would say that what we're seeing today is just faster, cheaper, better for the client, better for the firm, And it's this mindset deal that we'll talk about a little bit later that's really important. Yeah. How you embrace the technology, how you build relationships, not only with clients, but with other professionals and other team members.
Yeah.
So I started Boomer Consulting, and it was just by kind of luck in that I was selected as one of five CPAs throughout the country back in the 80s to help IBM with their marketing to the legal and accounting profession. And okay. My first topic really was on practice management tools and also then on how to process tax returns. And going back that far, Software 1040 was the leading provider on an IBM mini computer. And so you had to batch process 50 returns at a time. And the laser printer really was the innovation that changed all of that. Mm-hmm. So I've embraced technology and always been a bit of an explorer.
Yeah.
But at Boomer Consulting, I could see when I started to help firms with their technology strategy that there were a lot more components to it than just the technology. There was the leadership. There was the process piece. There was talent development and making sure you had the right type of people with the right unique abilities. There was also the growth component. So I said, I don't want to be a consultant and a sole practitioner out there. I want to develop a team of people that focus on leadership, technology, talent, processes, and growth. So over the years, we've done that. And I still am enamored with the technology, particularly blockchain, and the impact it's going to have on our profession and other tools that are out there. And I think a lot of firms have been reactive rather than proactive. And probably the big differentiator was that I learned early on, both within the profession, working with other larger firms, as well as outside with some major university athletic departments, that you had to simplify your process rather than make it more complex.
Sure.
And I would say that in accounting firms today, we have a lot of processes that are very complex. And some of them have a lot of personal preference built into it. Mm-hmm. And we have a Lean Six Sigma group. And they tell me that oftentimes, you know, it's the preference of this partner over that partner that really keeps firms from making more money and being able to have more capacity because they like to do things their way rather than have standards.
Yeah.
And that's become important with the advent of digitization of all the records, is there's no reason that a person can't live out of the geography of where a firm operates today, and it's really happening.
Yeah.
And if digitization started a lot of that, but then now video conferencing, better communication, just people working remotely, you know, is a big trend. Oh, so we built a team, and I think we've got a really good team. I like to stay around industry leaders. And even when I got started, I had about three peers across the country that I met through those IBM relationships. And that's what kind of gave me the idea of developing communities.
Right.
So people would have access to expertise and their peers.
Well, that's, and here's what amazes me about your team. So first of all, how many people do you guys have?
Just under 20.
Under 20. So you're not a big operation. And yet you've got, I mean, year after year after year, we see multiple folks from members of your staff, yourself included, being considered among the most influential people in the profession. So I guess I'm curious, you know, how does that happen? How does this, you know, a small firm in Manhattan, Kansas become one of, I don't know, the most influential accounting think tanks around?
Well, I've asked myself that question, and I heard a quote several years ago from a guy by the name of Charlie Tremendous Jones, who was a motivational speaker in the life insurance industry. And Charlie said, "You will be who you are today in 5 years, except for the books you read and the people you meet."
Mm-hmm.
And when I first heard that, I thought, you know, is that really true? But I have met an awful lot of really good people through my volunteer work at the AICPA, even some of it international. And I was questioned when I was a partner in a firm about how much time I was giving up and what rewards that was going to pay. And I always believed that I would meet great people, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
And those people have allowed us to grow. And as you bring a think tank together, I just enjoy going to dinner with our own people because I learn something. And they all read, they all meet others. So it just has taken a while to do this, but I feel very good about it.
That's fantastic. Well, that phrase, thought leader, it's been used so much that it's almost become cliche at this point, you know, and yet I personally know a lot of people who would like to be that, right? I mean, who would like to be what you and your team have become, especially today with things like advisory services becoming such a hot topic. I think there's a school of thought that says advisory and thought leadership kind of go hand to hand in a certain way. So I guess my question for you is, like, where do you start in building that type of thought leadership? How can folks who want to get there but aren't there get started down that path?
Well, I think the first tip was that the books you read and the people you meet mm-hmm. are very important. The other thing is that you have to journal or write things down so you get your thoughts in order. And we require all of our people to write 1,000 to 1,200 word articles. Now, that's harder to do than what you think.
No, you know, I know.
You know, you can write 5 pages easier than you can write 2.
Yes.
And so we have kind of trained our people to do that and capture some of that knowledge. And that's why I say my title today is Dot Connector, is really bringing people and access to talent, access to technology together so that we all can improve as a profession. And, yeah. and I'm not threatened by the profession or the disruption that's going on in the profession today. I'm actually excited about it because it moves people on up the value chain. We call it the continuum of value. I don't know why I didn't come up with that name 10 years ago, but I guess it was perhaps I couldn't spell continuum. But what it is if you think of a chart that just kind of goes up, you start at the transaction level, and that's where accountants really got their start back in the Renaissance with ledgers. Yeah. Then you get into the compliance, and that's the tax and the audit business. Then you get into the advisory, which people are trying to get into. And then finally, consulting. And consulting is the highest level, but you're more of an influencer mm-hmm. of good behavior and good processes mm-hmm. than you are of being the smartest person in the room, knowing the tax law, knowing the audit regulations, yeah. et cetera. So, to us, it requires a collaborative team to deliver those services and transform a firm today. And not everyone on that firm or on that team needs to be an accountant.
Right.
In fact, we see the strongest teams have people that are project managers, mm-hmm. sales and marketing, yeah. data analytics, technology expertise.
They all bring a different skill set to the table, yeah.
Absolutely. And we have to treat those other professionals with respect, just like we do CPAs in our profession, because they have a body of knowledge that's valuable to our clients and to our teams. And I think sometimes firms have run off some of the really good people in these areas because they weren't technical enough to pass the CPA exam, or they really today didn't have any desire to get into that financial measurement business, which we've been in.
Which is kind of unfortunate now, because we're starting to see that pendulum swing back toward, you know, these quote unquote soft skills as being, you know, the future ready skills that are going to be so critical going forward. And firms that haven't been kind of focusing on those may find themselves, you know, behind the eight ball.
I think that's absolutely true, that people are trying to catch up. And if you look at the metrics out there, the actual hiring of accounting graduates has gone down. Even though firms are hiring more people, mm-hmm. they're hiring people outside the accounting discipline to build their advisory services and consulting practices. Yeah. And that started at the Big Four 10 years ago, and it's come over to the regional firms in the last 5 years. And now we see that as the firm of the future, the future-ready firm, mm-hmm. you know, having multiple skill sets and offering additional services
right.
to clients.
Yeah. So let's put some of your influence and insights to work here. To describe for me what today's accounting and finance profession looks like as you see it. I've heard it described as being everything from endangered to evolving to being kind of that steady guiding light in this storm of chaos and complexity. What is the profession in your eyes today?
Well, I think we all have to have a vision. And one of the exercises we go through annually, I think Tom Hood came up with it, was the visioning exercise of be, do, have, create, and experience. And that may sound simplistic. I've had partners and firms say, oh, we know what that is. But they each have a little bit different iteration of it.
Right.
And until you get that vision down and know where you're going, it's hard to hire people. It's hard to attract new and better clients. Yep. So I really think you start with a vision and then you go to a plan. And we've been a big proponent of one-page strategic plans. Mm-hmm. And that really came from my background and experience with what I saw at Arthur Andersen. They issued these big 50-page plans, and no one ever read anything but the executive summary, and I went in the door or drawer. And one thing I learned about strategic planning was from the athletic department in a major university, and I told them I really didn't want to facilitate their planning process. I was used to working with accountants and CPAs, and it was enough to kind of herd those cats. I didn't know if I could herd the cats of a bunch of coaches in a Division I school and, you know, a pretty high prestigious school. Mm-hmm. And the athletic director said, we don't have anybody. And if you think CPAs are difficult to wrangle, try wrangling those head coaches. So we came up with a strategy that we do it like a game plan. And I said, that means I can laminate it. They can stick it in their pants. They can wrap it around their wrist or whatever they want to do. And, you know, that was probably a evolutionary step forward when we simplified it and got it down to one page.
Yeah. It's amazing what happens when you start to dumb stuff down like that and really just boil it down to the essence. It becomes a whole lot easier for everyone to understand and grasp and get behind. And it becomes more, I mean, when you spend the time to do that, it becomes more inspirational too, I think.
Yes. And people gain confidence. They see that taking a step at a time is really going to improve them, not that they're going from a loser to a winner, or from a firm that's not making much money to a firm that's making good money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's harder to change winners and highly profitable firms sometimes because there's just lack of motivation to change.
Sure. So once you get that kind of simplified one or two page strategic plan down to a point where it's inspirational and your leadership team is all on the same page with that? How do you drive that through the rest of the organization?
Accountability is the key, and accountability will change results quicker than any other single thing. And by accountability, I mean you tell people up front what their expectations are, and then you evaluate that continually. And to make it reasonable in any organization, we use 90-day game plans. And everyone from the managing partner to the receptionist has a 90-day game plan. And after they get through a couple of periods, maybe half a year or at most a year, they learn how to build these plans. I do one myself. It takes me about 15 minutes a quarter. I go back and look at how successful I was in four different areas, and then I develop my specific plan for the next quarter. And I review that with our management team. But people of our leadership team then evaluate people on a quarterly basis by going through that 90-day game plan. And it works wonders, and the young people love it. They love to be held accountable. It's the senior people that didn't grow up with a lot of accountability that sometimes want to not put the time into it. Yeah, but it really will be a lot less time in the long run if you do it this way.
Yeah, for people who aren't used to it, there's something a little scary about being held accountable for something like that. But I love that notion of 90 days. It's almost continuous review rather than just doing an annual review where you sit down once a year. And there's more consistent and frequent feedback, which kind of keeps them on the rails, right?
Absolutely. And that's what the young people want. And that's not just in the accounting profession. We're competing with other companies that we don't even know are our competitors today for this talent. But let me give you a good example. Cerner Corporation came in and spoke to our talent circle, which are the talent developers in some of the top 25 firms in the country. And what they're doing now is they're teaching their people how to be consultants first and then technical people second. Mm-hmm. And our talent people in the CPA profession, when I say our, I mean the people that participate in that community, are all saying, we've got to flip-flop our training learning programs and teach people how to be advisors and consultants first, and then have the technical skills. They can learn those quicker if they know how to be consultants first.
That's an interesting point. Well, as we're talking about vision and strategy, I mean, I'm kind of interested to know what you think about how this profession is evolving today. I mean, amid all the stuff that's happening, and we keep hearing these terms like disruption and evolution and anticipation, all that kind of stuff just being thrown around. But how is that impacting our profession? Is it impacting the profession? How is the profession changing or evolving in your eyes?
Well, it's definitely impacting. And I think disrupting is a more honest term. And Dan Sullivan, who I've known for over 25 years and heads the strategic coach program, says all progress starts with the truth. Mm-hmm. And I think as accountants, many times we tend to bend the harshness of the truth. Uh-huh. And we don't want to use the term disruption. We want to use the term change. And I like what Daniel Burris has said about change. You know, change simply isn't enough today. It's going to take transformation. Mm-hmm. And that's where I see us in a transformative period where our business model is inadequate. And by our business model, I mean hours times dollars. Yeah. I said 25 years ago, you can't do that. Invest in technology. Reduce your hours without reducing your margins. Yeah. And people did some things over the years, like a technology surcharge. But the pricing and the business model is broken for the future. Yeah. Also, the talent mix. We're going to have to upskill our existing talent and bring in new talent, of which the university hasn't changed enough to meet the requirements and needs of clients. Yeah. So there's going to be ongoing education at the firm level. And it used to be that the big firms did that, and then smaller firms hired from the big firms, and you learn for a lifetime. Well, today you have to be a lifelong learner.
Right, right. Yeah, we could spend all day talking about education. That. I mean, you talk about, you know, the fact that our skill sets are changing, and we'll get to talk about skill sets here in a second. But the skills that we're going to need to remain relevant and vital going forward are changing, and the people who are educating our next generation of accountants and finance professionals and CPAs, they're not teaching those kind of future ready skill sets. They're still educating the way that they always have, and that's a little frightening.
Well, and I think we can take it one step further. Is not only do you have the business model, the talent, processes today are dictated by what technology can do, rather than forcing technology to conform to our processes. Mm-hmm. And it used to be that we had to make technology conform to that paper process, but we see in digital processes, we can cut out loops, we can reduce cycle time, and as we do that, we increase capacity, we increase the profitability of the firm. And frankly, over on the left side of that value continuum, where you have transactional and compliance services, those are all limited by capacity. Mm-hmm. And when you move to advisory and consulting services, those are limited by capabilities.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. So let's talk about how these. Well, we mentioned earlier that this phrase that you use and toss around frequently that I love, mindsets, skill sets, tool sets, which I think is such an important notion going forward for the future of this profession. I'd love to get your thoughts on all three. First of all, this idea of mindset, how does that need to change in order for us to move this profession forward?
Well, let's look back to history a little bit. And it will tell us how this is going to play out. If you look back to 1992 and the internet, we really, the game there was information. Mm-hmm. You could gain information, but most accounting firms didn't use the internet when it came out. The reason being the lack of an interface. And then the iPhone or smartphone came out, I think it was 2007. Mm-hmm. It's just a little over 10 years ago. Well, nobody used that other than the phone until there were applications.
Right.
So again, the user interface. Now, I think we are changing from the status quo to more of an innovative profession. And it's a new game. And the new game is offering value. And value is going to differentiate you from someone offering just compliance. And so mindset is what it takes to move someone out of that status quo environment into an innovative value add environment. And we've got a graphic that we use for transformation, and we show a oak tree, and on half of the tree is the old side and there are no leaves. Mm-hmm. And on the other half, it's all green and new opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that mindset's important. So let me give you a few key mindsets. We've actually developed a mindset scorecard here.
Okay.
Mindset number one is you have to be a lifelong learner. Mm-hmm. Two, you have to be a member or want to be a member of a collaborative team. And we have some people in the profession that like to operate as a rugged individualist. They're the smartest guy in their area. But this is getting so broad that one person can't serve all the wants and needs of a client. It takes a collaborative delivery team. Another one is that they value sales and marketing. We've been pretty much a profession that's been order takers up to this point. As you sell more services to more clients, you're going to have to value that marketing sales process in the accounting profession. Mm-hmm. You're also going to have to value other disciplines as you go forward. That's really just the tip of the iceberg, and I don't want to get too far into just mindset.
Yeah,
but you start to see how it's different than, and I guess the other big difference is I could say, just because you don't have a game changer mindset doesn't mean you're not successful.
Right.
Success is defined individually. So accountants tend to define success by dollars. Mm-hmm. That's how they were taught. Mm-hmm. But there are other things to success. Are you future ready? Mm-hmm. Have you developed other people and brought them along for the ride? Right. Have you developed leaders? And kind of the four quadrants of the balanced scorecard, client satisfaction, processes, talent development, and then financial. Mm-hmm. As accountants, we tend to really overvalue the financial piece, right, because of our training. So to get the balance, you have to bring those in. So that's really what causes the differentiator between a game changer and a person that's successful. We call that traditional success. Mm-hmm. You have to, it's not that you need to, but you want to change and add more value to your clients.
So, and let me just play devil's advocate here, because I'm sure that there are some accountants out there who would say, you know, we talk about we've got to adopt a lifelong learning mindset. And there are some accountants out there who will say, well, I am a lifelong learner. It's part of my designation. I'm forced to continue to learn and update my skills. Or, you know, the fact that we need to add more value and not just compliance. And some would argue, well, you know, compliance is value. So, I mean, how do you come to grips with that type of mindset? Folks who say, well, you know, I'm already doing this stuff.
Well, that's certainly true. And I think that's the reason you need a shared vision as a firm if you're going to operate as a firm. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you won't be successful with either vision. I think it's going to be harder to sustain success if you don't change and grow. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you're a bad person. What it means is you probably hadn't ought to have those team members going different directions as a firm or company.
Yeah.
And it may not be the right fit for some people. There's a great book out there, Bill, and I know you and Tom read a lot. Mm-hmm. Carol Dweck has written, it's just simply called Mindset. Mm-hmm. And it talks about a fixed mindset versus a changing mindset, or a growth. Growth would be the term that she would use. And how the environment that you're brought up in and you grow in determines what kind of mindset you're going to have.
I think that's absolutely true. And it could be too that, you know, yes, we're lifelong learners. It's part of our DNA as accountants, finance folks. But going forward, I think it's more of a question of what are we learning, right? Are we learning the right stuff that's going to help us grow and further our careers and add more value for our clients going forward? So,
well, Bill, I would even take it a step further and say it's not the what and how as important today as the who. Mm-hmm. As you get more in the value add and hire an organization, I have to ask myself, who can do that? Mm-hmm. Not how am I going to do it, but who can take that and do it, even if they don't know how, if they can figure it out.
Yep. That's a great point. Absolutely.
So having dinner with thought leaders and other things, I always walk away and say, I only need one or two good ideas.
That's right. That's right. And to be able to know the people who can put them into place, those relationships are just so key going forward. Unbelievable.
Well, they do your R&D for you.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, we could talk about mindset all day, but I want to get to skill sets now too. What are you, and we talked a little bit about competencies and skills that we're going to need going forward. How do you see our skill sets as changing?
Well, I think we've got to be much better at adding value. Our process has got to be more effective. And it's not just efficiency of process, because sometimes the technology will cover that lack of efficiency. So having effective processes, managing projects, and if you have a client that you're doing six services for, let's say you're doing some transactional payroll, bill payment, you're also doing an annual compilation, you're doing a tax return, you may be doing a strategic plan. It takes somebody that can manage all those projects with different people on them. That's a new skill set. We actually have two project managers at Boomer Consulting. 10 years ago, we would have never called anyone a project manager. We would have, might have called them a back office clerical person. But project management has grown so sophisticated with the tools we have that's a good one. Sales and marketing, you know, people talk about social media. That's a skill in and of itself in most firms. Mm-hmm. So you have to value that. And same way with data analytics and using data for predictive reasons rather than historical verification.
Yep, I see that one popping up all the time too. I want to go back. You've mentioned this word a couple of times, value, adding value. We have to add more value. How do you define that? How do you define that word, value?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would say there's three ways that you add value, and I'll tell you why or how you do that: relationship, leadership, and creativity. Relationship builds confidence. If I know you and you recommend a book to me to read, I'm a lot more likely to read that book than if I go out on Amazon and see a lot of other people out there who've read the book. Mm-hmm. So relationships really add confidence. Leadership provides direction. And I think we've got a lot of leaders in accounting firms, but sometimes they really need to step forward and show some I guess courage would be the kindest word, rather than try to build all kinds of consensus. Great leaders have pretty simple strategies. And the last one's creativity. And I don't think you've probably heard or I've heard as much about innovation throughout our careers as we've heard in the last 18 months.
Right.
Everyone's talking about innovation, and it's like it's an aha moment rather than it's a lifetime experience, where Steve Jobs always said that innovation comes from hindsight, insight, and foresight. Mm-hmm. And I would certainly agree with that.
Yeah. So it's really more than a skill that you just can learn overnight. It's a muscle that you need to build over time, really.
Yes. And, you know, some of the larger firms now have a chief innovation officer, and most all of them will tell you they've got to have a good technology background, because without it, you're doing what I would call incremental innovation mm-hmm. rather than exponential innovation. Mm-hmm. And as we look to adding value with these three things, we have to think differently in order to be able to see the future. And if you think 10 times or exponentially, the answers come much easier than if you think incrementally in 10%.
Yeah. And I've been telling people lately too, especially with the advances in technology and Moore's Law and this incremental advancement that we've been seeing, that you, when you're trying to think about how things are going to be different, you almost have to start with a baseline that almost anything is going to be possible. When you talk about incremental change, or exponential change, rather, really, we have no idea what it's going to look like 5-10 years from now.
Well, I can tell you, it's going to be a lot different. and you know, Daniel Burris talks about hard trends and soft trends, And you don't have to read a lot of books to know economically the world is changing, not only with our trade tariffs. And, you know, I think it was 1944, right at the end of the war, the U.S. really stepped forward, and we as a country did not take over or occupy the territories like every other war. Mm-hmm. We put together, I think it was in Bretton Woods in New Hampshire, I believe is where it is. We put together kind of the protection and the International Monetary Fund and the World Banking, and that's been in play. But you're starting to see in Europe and other countries how that's changing, mm-hmm. and how we as a country can't be the police force of the world. Mm-hmm. And how the countries we trade with and do business with in the future may be different than what they've been in the past 20 years. So some of those trends are out there. And once you know the hard trends, then you can start making some assumptions and managing your risk with the softer trends.
Right. Yeah, there are some things that you know are going to happen.
Right.
I think that's Dan's point. It's just a matter of spotting those trends and asking yourself, how are they going to impact me? Which may lead
one of the things I've learned recently is, as a country, the U.S. isn't in nearly as bad a shape as I thought we might be with the aging population compared to Japan, Germany, Russia. Some other countries are in much worse shape. And part of it has to do with our kids have had kids, and we brought in immigrants. And our immigrants tend to come into this country at a younger age rather than have to be 30, 35 to get into Canada, for example.
Interesting. But there's all kinds of nuances to some of the stuff that doesn't often get considered. Okay, third question. So we've talked about mindsets and how they're changing. We've talked about some of their skill sets. How about our tool sets?
Just look at the technology that we're getting today.
Yeah.
Artificial intelligence, you know, has been a term that's been around for 20 some years. But I like machine learning a lot better. I like robotics. And for those people that have a little bit of technology background, you know, I simplistically define robotics and machine learning as a huge batch file or a batch file on steroids. And we're seeing companies come into the market that can do a better job of gathering, aggregating, and entering data than human beings. Mm-hmm. And they can take that data from multiple sources, from multiple databases, and develop real-time dashboards on the other side.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether it's Intuit, Sage, Intacct, any of the big players, NetSuite, Oracle. It doesn't matter whose general ledger you're using. Once you get in the cloud, that information flows and can be analyzed much better.
Right.
And you can get real-time decision-making information. So we're starting to see that. But when I say the tool set, I warn people, don't take just one technology and like blockchain and think that's going to be something I've got to hook my wagon to. It's really the convergence of multiple technologies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you take the Internet of Things, networks and sensors, put them with machine learning, and you need to also know that in blockchain, like we put right in there, the accounting profession as such will not be touched by this as soon as the clients. But once the clients are touched with supply chain blockchains, mm-hmm. and that's happening right now at Walmart and different companies, shipping companies, music companies. Once our clients are touched, then we're touched.
Sure.
We have to know how to apply the audit assertions to blockchain, just like we have to do it in today's banking world. Mm-hmm. So where's the cutoff for confirmation of the asset?
Right.
In a blockchain. Which block? What hour of 12/31/2018 does that occur? You know, those are all guidelines that have to be determined.
Yeah. So am I hearing you correctly that these new technologies, artificial intelligence, blockchain, all the stuff that we've been talking about, a lot of folks in the profession are worried about, you know, are these things coming to steal our jobs? And we keep reading headlines that, you know, these things are going to eat away, oh, this many millions of jobs over the next 10 or 15 years or whatever. It almost sounds like you're saying that there's an opportunity here for us to work side by side and kind of augment the work that the machines do with our insights. Am I hearing you correctly?
You're hearing me absolutely correctly. And the risk we run as a profession is if we wait too long, our skill sets have gotten so obsolete that we're no longer relevant. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're relevant with regard to the processes. We have the trust of the client. And I'll give a lot of thought leaders, and particularly Barry Melanson, a lot of credit for his vision in our profession. It's much better than what's happening in legal or healthcare, insurance, and others. But yet Barry's had to take the heat from a lot of auditors and other people in services saying, you got to do more to sustain our profession. Mm-hmm. Well, change happens and we have to transform as a profession. And that's the biggest thing that we're providing, I think, to our client base, which happens to be the top 500 firms, is how do they go about this business transformation process?
Right. Right. And it's interesting how those three things, those tool sets, skill sets, mindsets, all kind of dovetail together, right? I mean, changing tool sets means that we've got to change our skill sets. And it requires a new mindset as well. So, I mean, those three things are kind of three sides of the same coin almost.
Yeah, it's option D, all of the above. Mm-hmm. You can't just select one of them. And, you know, you may sustain yourself longer with the right mindset, but if you don't get some new skill set and tool set, it's probably not going to be that important.
So I guess the million-dollar question here is what does this profession look like to you tomorrow? What should it become, or should it change at all? I mean, are you, when it comes to the future of this profession, are you more bull or bear?
Oh, I'm definitely bullish on the profession. Mm-hmm. I think that we are probably in the very best time we've ever been in. We have the trust of the business community. They're wanting to automate their operations, and there's a lot of roles for us to play. We just have to quit thinking we're the masters of tax and the masters of financial reporting and say we are the aggregator of all these services. It's not an and/or basis. It's an and proposition, not an or proposition. Mm-hmm. So we can continue to package and price traditional services with new services and sustain this profession and add increased value, I think it's a great opportunity. Let's just don't mess it up.
Absolutely. So circling all the way back to the beginning and talking about you as an influencer and your team as certainly an influential team, I'm interested, Gary Boomer, who influences you?
That's a good question, a very fair question. And you will know some of the people that I tell you. Mm-hmm. Dan Sullivan has had a great impact in that I've been part of Strategic Coach for 25 years. Oh, it's a journey. Dan used to joke about, he said, I want slow learners with a lot of cash. And I was one of the few CPAs in there because it was more built for entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. But I would consider myself an entrepreneur, and I learned from those other entrepreneurs about what they wanted, not necessarily about what they needed, but what they really wanted from their accounting firms,
yep.
And they weren't getting it. Mm-hmm. Tom Hood has been a great influencer. You know, we do strategic planning for firms and companies all over the country, even some internationally. Tom has been our facilitator because as I tell our clients, the last thing you want to do is try to teach your spouse how to play tennis or golf.
Right.
Same way with strategic planning. So we bring in the outside facilitator, and Tom has had a big impact. Steve Blundell, he just passed away a year ago, was a VP at Intuit. And I met him when I worked with those five guys at IBM. And he's been a great influencer. Larry Wolf, another one that I met from my early days, was a VP at Intuit. He's now retired. And I could probably go on with another handful, but those first four that come to mind have been very influential. And I encourage people to develop that cadre of people that will be honest with them. They will promote their strengths. They will tell them who they need to find to help them with their weaknesses. Because coaching is a lot different than mentoring. Mm-hmm. You really have to have somebody that'll tell you the truth to be a good coach. And that takes sincerity, and it takes somebody that's coachable too.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, great stuff. Gary, thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate your time and your insights. It's a pleasure as always talking to you.
Well, nice to talk with you, Bill, and best of luck.
That was Gary Boomer, founder, visionary, and strategist at Boomer Consulting, and a thought leader to the profession, really. You can learn more at boomer.com. And if you want to make yourself a little bit more future ready, you simply need to attend the inaugural Anticipatory Accelerator. This is a two-day workshop that's designed to help accelerate your firm's success in predicting the future and in identifying game-changing opportunities. All of Boomer's influencers will be there. Tom Hood will be there. I'll be there. It should be just an amazing event. It's presented by the folks at Boomer Consulting and the Business Learning Institute, and it's scheduled for November 5th and 6th at the Accounting Innovation Center in Kansas City. So for more details and to register, visit macpa.org/anticipatory.